last time. I thought I had them in real good shape. Had them printed up and passed out. Then I realized they were a little bit premature. But I don't have time to rework them. Some things left out, some things not needed, some things in the wrong order. But I'll try to straighten them out as we go through here. I think one of the most enjoyable times I had in the Navy was the 2 years that I taught naval science at the Merchant Marine Academy with the rank of assistant professor. You didn't know I was a professor. But my students were pretty sharp, and they always made too good of grades on the tests. And I was always trying to outwit them so they wouldn't get up in the 90s. And so I finally figured it out that they would watch me, and something I would emphasize in a certain way, they knew that was going to be on the exam. So no matter how I tried to disguise it, they'd always come with those high grades, so I wasn't a very good actor. But now tonight, I do have some things I want to emphasize. So what I did was wrote on eight cards here. So as I'm going through the notes, and this is the point I want to emphasize now, I want to read this card, and I'll lay it over here. So if I don't pick up a card, well, then you know that point's not all that important. But I'm going to read the last card first. That's a number eight. Then I'm going to read it again at the conclusion. And this is the Navigator Administration, under Jerry Bridges' leadership, is taking a creative, responsible, and effective approach to solving these transitional problems and deserve our gratitude and thanks. So I'll read that again when we conclude. If Lauren Sanney were here to add to the jokes that are being told, I'm sure he would tell about the young lady that came to a man's door selling magazine subscription. And she told him if he would subscribe to this at the end of the first year, he'd get a certain bonus. And at the end of the second year, it'd be another bonus. The end of the third year, another bonus. And so he said, young lady, at my age, I don't even buy green bananas. When Ronald Reagan was being questioned about whether he was qualified to be president at his age or not, he had some research done, and it was authentic research, and they came up and said, well, there is young old and old. So young old is up to 75, and beyond 75 is old. So he was considered, he was in the young old category at that time. Well, the first thing on this subject, finishing well, how do you evaluate whether or not a person finishes well, is finishing well? I think we've got an answer in this scripture. We've got it the first, and it's about 1, 2, 3, 4, line 4. They will still bear fruit in old age. So isn't that a good enough way to evaluate if you're finishing well? If a person is still bearing fruit in old age, then I think they're finishing well. So that's my first card here, which says, those rightly related to God will always bear fruit regardless of age. So having seen this, I have to ask myself the question, am I finishing well? Am I bearing fruit or just spinning the wheels? Well, I'll just tell you a little bit about some of the things I'm involved in. There's a deacon's meeting at church tonight. I consented to be a deacon the first year, and I've missed that. In fact, I've missed every meeting since I accepted the position. I get up at 4:30 on Wednesday mornings to go down to Pueblo to teach a Bible study. I get up at 5:30 on Thursday morning, and I have lunch at the Glen about three times a week with somebody that I'm meeting with, and had a great time with Jim Morris. over in Kansas a couple weekends ago. You know, it's always a real privilege to be over there with Jim. We were talking about the early community ministry, and I told him, I said, well, when I came out of the Navy, joined the staff in 1956, I was looking around for, I considered a model the Navigator Ministry, is what I'd seen aboard ship. So I looked around, and I had a little hard time finding something I thought was a perfect model until Jim invited me to come to Wichita. And then when I saw what he had, I said, that's it. And that was 30 years ago. And we met a couple weeks ago with about 84 men, I think. All of them are team leaders all over Kansas. And I've never seen such a terrific bunch of men, Jim. Never worked with them. So that was a great time. Well, the reason I brought that up, I was supposed to be kind of a pace setter. And while all these other guys slept on cots in the Salvation Army camp, Jim put me up at a place motel right down the road. So, you know, I don't feel like I'm a pace setter in a lot of areas, but in the morning I'm going up to Seattle, spend the weekend in a reunion. I'll have a little responsibility up there as Northwest Navigators have a reunion every year. Come back Monday, I'm going to Pueblo to help Bob Potter in the thing he's doing out Pueblo Tuesday night, and then my Wednesday routine starts over again. So whether there's any fruit or not, I don't know, but I'm spinning my wheels in the old age. Anyway, but I hope this can be true. Now I'm going to skip point two and put it in later here, down three. Two mistakes Christians make, according to Oliver Buswell. He said the first mistake is there's a few that think that God can't get along without them. And then the other mistake that's just as bad is people think that he can't. Well, I think this verse tells us up here that he can't get along without those that belong to him, even in old age. He expects them still to bear fruit in old age. Now, I haven't got any white card on this next thing because I want to downplay this, but I've got it in the notes, so I'll put it down here anyway, as to how this idea of retirement at 65 originated. This was an article I cut out of the paper that came out of an interview with a congressman talking about Social Security. So beginning at the second paragraph, he said, why 65? Why not 63 or 67? One account has it that the number was chosen by Chancellor Otto von Bismarck in 1881 when he established the first known Social Security program. Historians observe that he wasn't as interested in the welfare of German workers as he was in weakening the magnetism of socialism. Whoever has a pension for his old age, he said, is more content and easier to manage than one who has no such prospect. He chose 65 after his actuaries concluded that few Germans in the late 19th century lived much beyond age 65. So they didn't have to have too much reserve in their pension funds those days. Now I think he's a little wild on his final figures, but he said if this were true today, you know, in figuring retirement, you just figure out the actuarial age and then set it just about where that is. Now, I know the Navigators are the exception to what I'm going to say now, so I don't want to include them in this, but it kind of reminds me of the article I read in the newspaper once where this editor said, according to the Christians, there are only two classes of people, the sinners and the saints. And he says, the saints do the classifying. So, there are only two kind of people, those that are young enough to stay on full time, and those that are not. And you know who does the classifying here in this. Well, I know that all of our minds are open, and if the particular age structure that we use now becomes obsolete, we'll change it sometime. You know, we're not frozen in on it. But isn't that interesting how that 65 got into the picture? Well, no white card on that point. We'll downplay that one. Now to turn the page, skip 5, I'll put it in later, and 6. Have you seen this prayer by Ann Landers for people that are growing older? Skip the first part, but you'll notice a black mark down on the right side. We'll just read those part where the mark is in the margin. And the prayer, Lord, thou knowest that I'm growing older. Keep me from becoming too talkative, and particularly, keep me from falling into the tiresome habit of expressing an opinion on every subject. Then skipping a paragraph, keep my mind free from the recital of endless details. Give me wings to get to the point. And the next paragraph, give me grace, dear Lord, to listen to others describe their aches and pains. Help me to endure the boredom with patience and to keep my lips sealed. For my own aches and pains are increasing in number and intensity, and the pleasure of discussing them is becoming sweeter as the years go by. Well, I'm not going to read any more of that, but I've got my second white card here, which says, talking more than listening may be a sign of diminishing energy, since it takes less energy to talk than to listen. So when the younger generation is trying to decide who's young enough to stay active and who is older, I think this is one of the one criterion that's used. Do you observe that in other people? And maybe in yourself sometimes? As we get older, that's very characteristic, isn't it? Talk more. Well, that's the only reason I can think of that we do it. It takes less energy. So that's a bad sign, diminishing energy. I am not going to say anything about, the aging process, except to give one bit of testimony that I've noticed not only has my energy diminished a little bit, but my coordination has diminished a little bit. And the most irritating thing I do is try to pick up something and reach down and then straighten up, and I miss it about 2 inches. And I go down again, and the same thing happens, and it takes about a half a dozen times. I use up all my energy getting things coordinated so that I close my finger before I raise up, even if I do get down far enough. Okay, well, that was the second white card, that it takes less energy to talk than does to listen. Now, on the third page here, one of my favorite graphs was first popularized by the British mathematician Gompertz in the late 1700s. And he called this his life cycle curve. And he said every living thing can be located on the curve, no matter what it is. It's someplace on there. So try locating yourself physically on the curve. You know, there's the birth, struggle for survival, growth, plateau, peaking out, decline, and death. Well, according to the experts, when you have reached age 33, you go downhill physically. Nothing you can do about it except put on the brakes and slow the process, but you're on the way down. And many think that that's the reason that Christ chose the approximate age of 33 at the peak of his physical perfection to be crucified. Now, from then on, humanly, he would have gone downhill physically. Probably the most demanding sport is heavyweight boxing. And you'll notice that's when most of them fight their last fight, when they're about 33. They can be much more skillful than a younger man, but he comes along and can pound them to pieces just because they're over the peak physically. Unfortunately, there's a close parallel, it seems, between the physical and the mental. And in too many cases, the mental follows the physical. Now, that's not always true. I've noticed in the service academies that they're well-selected, well-trained, come out Air Force Academy as second lieutenants, but not all of them even make first lieutenant. And then not all of them make captain, not all of them make major. And only one out of 100 ever makes general. Because although they've got this great start, you see, the medal peaks out someplace along the line. Now, the one exception to this should be spiritually. And Peter, in his old age, 2 Peter 3:18, said that grow in grace and in the knowledge of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. So the Christian should be the one exception. That is, our spiritual lives. In the day we die, we should be growing. That curve should be going up, getting to know the Lord better and growing in grace. Someone has said that a definition of death is simply the cessation of growth. Growth stops, death begins. So we can peek out any place along that curve. We don't have to wait till we get to the top. So my third card here says, to stop growing spiritually is to start dying. So that's what we're going to be expected to do all of our lives, even in old age, is still growing, getting to know the Lord better. Now the point that's number 8 down there, I think this is more an application than it is an interpretation, but it's interesting to look up this Ecclesiastes 8:8 in many versions, and all of them come out a little bit different. I think it's the King James says there's no discharge in that war. And another translation says there's no furlough in battle. Well, this further reinforces just what we said. Not only are we expected to grow as long as we live, but there's not even a furlough in the battle, much less a discharge from it. It's a lifetime thing. So my fourth card here says, we may change battlefield, but no furlough or discharge in the spiritual warfare. Okay, turning a page, we'll get into a few more practical things here. I want to talk about the here and now. And at the beginning, I had this note on when life begins. Some of you heard me tell this story a couple years ago, but maybe you've forgotten it by now. The rabbi and the priest and the pastor were discussing when life begins. And the priest said, life begins at conception. And the pastor said, no, I think it begins at the beginning of the fifth month. And the rabbi said, you're both wrong. And he says, life begins when the children leave home and the dog dies. What I'm saying at this point, that reaching a certain age is not all bad. In fact, it's we can say it's all good. You know, a life begins, a new phase in life. And I think about Peter here. As I look at his life, I see four periods in it. He started out as a learner, and then he became a leader, and then he became a statesman. And you remember in the council there in Acts 15 that Simon, or James rather, was apparently the chairman of the meeting. And after Peter spoke, he said, well, Peter said it, so that's all there is to it, you know, go on with him. He was a statesman. And then finally, he was the author. And you remember some of the great things that he wrote to us. So I think as Peter went through life, that each stage was more fulfilling. As he went down the line, as he got old, it wasn't bad, it was better. Now, as I have heard about the four ages of man, and you know somebody in every one of these stages, 20 to 35 is positioning. A man is more interested in what his job is leading to than he is a job himself. And that's the reason it's difficult to work with this age people right out of college, because they're so absorbed in their career. Then the age 35 to 50, according to industrial psychologists, is the age of producing. And a man's drive during that time is to produce. And when I first heard this, I looked around the Navigators and said, is there any parallel in the Navigators? And I found out that you'd find somebody in this age group, you know, 35 to 40, and he had something going over here that was real good and would have been of interest and help to the whole Navigators. But do you think you could find out what he was doing? He's not interested in telling you. He's interested in doing it, you know, producing. That's the thing. But eventually, a man realizes, I'm not going to be around forever. So if I'm going to leave anything to posterity, I've got to start teaching what I know to other people. That's the only way to be carried on. So the golden age in a man's working years are 50 to 65, when he is the producer, coach, teacher, sure. Not only produces, but teaches everybody else everything that he knows. So it will be spread broader. I picked this up at a seminar on motivation I attended up at the University of Wisconsin. For some reason, they stopped at 65 in this. So I had to add my own on beyond 65. And I've concluded that this is the golden age plus when that this becomes a high priority, is teaching and coaching, even more than producing, I think, in the final period there. So getting older is not all bad. It's all good. It's the golden age. It's the richest time. When we had Oswald Sanders here in that conference we had in 1980, I was having a meal with him, and he said, I think he was 75 then, and he said, so far, my 70s have been the richest in my life. And he said, E. Stanley Jones prayed that his 70s would be the richest and most productive in his life. And on his during his 80th year, he spoke on television. I saw him on television, and he brought that in. He said, the 70s have been the greatest. I asked God to make them the greatest, and they have been the greatest. So, as you look forward to this period, my card here I've written down, the richest, most enjoyable, and most fruitful decade of our lives may be the 70s, can be the 70s. So we'll follow Oswald Sanders, E. Stanley Jones, and others in making that a goal. You know, I think it needs to be a reality. Now, my next birthday, I'll be 74. And I can't remember all that's happened in the 70s. But it's been good. And it's been a lot of fun. And if there's anything wrong with it, I think I'd be conscious of it. But I'm not. Jerry and I met out at the airport a couple weeks ago. He was on his way to Kansas City for a weekend, and I was on my way to meet with Jim. And we were talking about what I was doing, and Jerry, I guess, sorry to tell this. I kind of got the impression Jerry said, well, I can hardly wait until I shed some of these worries about income tax and law and pensions and so forth and can get out there and do, you know, what God has given me to do and what I love to do. So getting older is not all bad. Now I'm trying to get down to the nitty-gritty. The first time I approached this subject, I said, well, now what's the big deal anyway about making a transition? What changes? And I made a list of what changes and what doesn't change. So here you see in number 9, there's no change in our obligation or ability to be kept in the will of God. That has nothing to do with age or transition or occupation, does it? There's no change in our obligation to keep using our gifts. They're for the long haul. There's no change in our relation to our spouse, children, grandchildren, church, Christian friends, and associates. A lot of our life's taken up with them, isn't it? Well, that doesn't change. There's no change in long-standing relationships with members of the Navigator family. I think one of the things that we discover even before we get in the 70s, that you have a personal relationship with some people and a functional relationship with some people, and you may not know the difference until the function no longer exists. But not much change in the navigator friendships. The next point here, E, except for having more time for it, there's no change in the matter of prayer, Bible study, and the ministry. Correspondence and business matters continue. My desk is just as cluttered as it's always been, sometimes more. And then I thought I ought to add this one here under G, that there's no change in the second law of thermodynamics. And you recognize that Henry Morris talks about this a little bit. It's his main objection to evolution, that he says the second law of thermodynamics is a stable law in all the universe. And that is, everything is wearing out and running down and falling apart and going to pieces. Evolution requires that the second law of thermodynamics be reversed so that things are improving. Well, around the house, or if you got a car, or anything you own, you're going to wear out, run down, fall apart. So that happens no matter what age we're in. The dandelions grow taller than anything else. Well, then what does change? The main things in our life don't change. Oh, no, I'm not ready for this yet. Time and energy is not regimented the way it was before. As I've analyzed our 3 years in Europe, we had 350 staff over there, and what their needs were determined my priorities. I didn't have too much time for my own priorities. Somebody else set them. Well, now my time and energy is pretty well regimented by myself. Our financial position changes, and I haven't been in all the sessions, but I hope that yours does the same as mine did, that when I start putting money into retirement and into taxes, actually our financial condition improved. And I had the greatest income in 1986 that I've ever had in my entire life. So, you know, by planning ahead, it doesn't happen to happen that way. About 10 years before I realized I was going to change, I had heard many navigators talk to them and say, well, if you ever come to Singapore, we'd like to have a conference. If you ever come to Sweden, we'd like to have a conference. Well, what they were saying is, if you ever get over here at your own expense, we'd like to put you to work. So I asked the Lord about 10 years before I knew this time was coming to allow me to go any place in the world at my own expense, anytime I was asked, if that was necessary. And that provision has been made. So when we talk about, finances changing, well, there's a good chance they're going to improve, not necessarily go down. Okay, opportunities for more volunteer ministry. I'm going to talk more about that in a little bit. More time for leisure and recreation, more time for the family. I'm stretching it here. More health and energy problems, that's a minus. But the greatest thing here is more time for creativity. I read a book a while back called Your Emotions and Your Faith by a Dr. Cedar, Southern Baptist. And the one phrase that I remember in this was, he said, as long as one produces creatively, he has a sense of purpose. Now, that's probably the most important statement I'm going to make here tonight, other than Scripture. And I've seen so many times, I was at Bible study this morning, one of the fellows and I were talking, I just mentioned the second law of thermodynamics and said, I'm going to talk about it tonight. And he said, what else are you going to talk about? So I told him a little bit, and he said, you know, that's interesting. He said, I've got two friends that just came out of the military. And he said, both of them committed suicide the second year of their retirement. And he says, furthermore, he said that most retired military officers do not live 5 years after retirement. Well, and there's another figure, I wish I knew exactly what it was, as to how many executives die the first year of retirement. And the figure is staggering, how many do. Well, why is that? After I had my bypass surgery in 78 or 79 it was, I checked in with a cardiologist in London. So one day I was sitting outside the office waiting to see him, and another Britisher just ahead of me. And you know, you don't talk to somebody over there unless you're introduced. But he'd been to talk to me, kind of surprised me. You know, I guess he knew I wasn't British, so it'd be all right if he talked to me. So what are you doing here? And I told him, and he said, then I asked him, I said, what are you doing here? He said, well, I had a heart attack. And, so he went ahead and told me how it happened. He said, I always drive into my office in my car. 200,000 cars fight the traffic every morning getting into downtown London to try to find a place to park and get through the traffic. And he said, somebody suggested that I take a train. So I said, I took a train. And he said, the train was on time. But he said, I couldn't control it. I couldn't start it. I couldn't stop it. And I was so frustrated, I had a heart attack and almost died on the train. Well, this is the reason, I believe, that so many people die so soon. They cannot cope, particularly for type A personalities. You know, they can't control anything. Now, most senior military officers, they start another organization, you know, try to run the government in exile from their position here. But this one fellow, he told me this morning, this man that committed suicide, he said he was a non-commissioned officer, but he was a medic, and he was in charge of the whole operation, people always coming to him for advice, and he was busy. Next day he was retired, and nobody even knew he existed. He couldn't cope with it, so he committed suicide in that. Now, in my own experience, I have got a list of about 50 projects that call for some creativity. And if it even looks like that I'm approaching the end of that, I begin to get depressed, and I begin to get worried. And, you know, if I ever ran out of projects, I'd be in a bad shape here. So I agree with Dr. Cedar that as long as one produces creatively, he has a sense of purpose. So let me just suggest to you that right now, start keeping a list of projects, don't care how big it gets, that requires personal creativity, and let that grow. Because if you ever come to the point you don't have that, then you can be in bad shape, I think. So for card number 6, I said the made hey, I didn't look a card down that. I should have. Well, that's one of the most important things in here. So I'm sorry I didn't make a white card on it. Okay, now a little more practical here. Well, I did make a card on part of that. Let me read it here. The major change after limited assignment is how the working day is spent. The majority of our joys, responsibilities, and problems remain the same. Now I'm combining the last two things. The other is here, where I said, what does change? Down here, what is that? Under major changes, the choice of how we spend the working day is now our sole responsibility. So having made the transition from a full-time staff member to a non-full-time, what's changed? Well, that's about all that's changed, is how the working day goes. you know, you decide yourself how it goes instead of somebody else. That's a major change. But there's one other thing in here. And I think probably that's, I haven't read Elvin's job description, but I think that if I'm writing a job description, this area I'd major in, because such an excellent job has been made in all the other areas. But the greatest challenge that happens in this transition is the psychological and emotional adjustment of being something less than we once were in the intimacy of the Navigator family. Now, that intimacy is disturbed to a degree with every change of assignment or every change of position or title. There's a certain amount of that loss of intimacy. But the greatest fear, I think, and greatest challenge is, now how am I going to relate to the family after this transition? So I think this is about the only thing that can't be solved kind of the mathematical formula, 1, 2, 3. This is something that takes more. Now, I just want to give a little bit of personal testimony. I did this the last one of these had. And I mentioned that I've been retired to the military service for about 30 and a half years. I do not know anybody personally at the Air Force Academy, at Fort Carson, or at Peterson Field out there. But about 6 months ago, I guess I got a, what do you call it, infected tooth, an abscess tooth. And I stayed up as late as I could, but finally when daylight came, I headed out for Fort Carson. I didn't know how to get in touch with a civilian dentist. And so I talked to people there, and he called a dentist at home. And he talked to me on the phone a little bit, and he said, well, it'll take me 20 minutes to get in. So he come charging in early in the morning that took care of my tooth. Well, I know that if I've got any medical problem, even though I don't know anybody personally, I can go out there and they'll take care of me. I've got a sticker on my car that lets me in any military installation, and it's the color that the sentry gives me a big salute when I go in. And if I go to the commissary at Fort Carson, there's a few reserved parking spaces. And there's a commanding general here. Next to him, it says retiree. And then there's some more lesser important people that have parking spaces. But between the commanding general and every place else is retiree. Now, there's only two of them. And there's 20,000 retired officers in this area here. So not everybody uses the parking space. But it's symbolic that the military cares. They recognize the importance of the retiree. Well, perhaps those kind of props shouldn't be necessary, but they are. And I know that Joyce and I have discussed it, that that's the biggest fear and probably the worst experience is for that emotional and psychological isolation. Now, I say that the Navigators as an organization have been better to me than the military. And I don't feel like I've ever been treated as anybody out of the family. You know, I've got a sticker that gets me on Glen Eyrie, and I get the news once a week. And I told Donald McGilchrist if we ever had an empty office, that some of the things I do, you know, I could use an office. So he gave me a good office. I got an office over in the building. I look at the calendar, turn the calendar every time I go in there, and it's generally about 2 weeks in between. I have to turn over 14 pages, but I'm going to be working on Reunion 88, and that'll be my headquarters. So I think no matter what your responsibility has been, and you know, where you've been located geographically, it will depend on what psychological and emotional need that you have. But it can't be ignored. And Elvin, I see that as your primary job, is to find out what that need is and see that something is done about it. I'll tell you about one of my psychological needs, and I think that others might have it. And I've got a note up down here. Let's see, it's under A. The staff member changing status needs to let these needs be known. And a full-time navigator staff must be responsive to those needs. Then I've got in parentheses, House of Lords concept. I mentioned this to Lauren several years ago and to Jerry White and Terry Taylor and others, and I haven't got any good response yet, and I think I know why, but I won't mention that. But when we moved to England, I thought that well, you got the House of Commons, that's like the House of Representatives, and the House of Lords, that's like the Senate. But Mike Trenier checked me out, and he said, no, that's not the way it works. And I said, well, what does the House of Lords, what do they do? And he said, well, try to find out. he said, I wish I could explain it to you. But he said, it's made up of everybody that has the hereditary title of Lord and everybody who has the bestowed title of Lord. Everybody belongs to it. You know, if you're a Lord by title, you belong to the House of Lords. He said, now, only about 10% of them ever show up down there. But these are the people whose families have invested in the British Empire for 1,000 years. And they are the protectors of the culture, the heritage, their economics, their fortunes, the way of life, their traditions, good and bad. And their job is to protect those in the best interests of their country and themselves. So they have the right to veto any act of the Prime Minister or of the House of Commons or of the Queen. Now, the veto can't stick, though. They just have a little cooling off period. And if the Prime Minister or the House of Commons or the Queen wants to overrule, they can go ahead and overrule it, but not without having to stop their tracks at a checkpoint. So I feel one of the things that will meet this psychological need is for senior staff like yourselves to have some kind of a formal entity where that you can ask questions. no power, no authority, but you can ask questions. And, for example, when you get a letter and it says that we're trying to raise $4.5 million for a visitor center for Glen Eyrie. And when I got that, I know I said, hey, we vetoed that area, that idea 10 years ago. And it wasn't $4.5 million, it was 40,000 10 years ago. Now, I don't say that the idea is not right now. Then I get a letter that says it's all a mistake. Well, I read in the newspaper that you know, they're raising $750,000 for fixtures, light fixtures, ornaments for the castle over here. And I found out later that was a mistake, too. Well, I think the senior staff, whatever you call them, you know, they say, what's going on here? You know, we gave our life to this. And is there any checkpoints here in it? No power, no authority, but to ask questions on it. However, I feel that the main function for people that have given their lives, the navigators, and our main concern is the purity and the integrity of the vision and the ministry. Now, back to Gompertz curve that I had, I've been asked a question. Will the navigators ever peek out, cut across, start to die? Yeah. And my answer is, well, if we don't, we'll be the first organization in history that hasn't, you know, of our type. I hope we're the exception, but I doubt if we're immune. But we want to put that off as long as we can, don't we? And the people that have given their lives to the navigators, I think, probably the first to spot the trends that might cause that to come off prematurely. So that's just a suggestion I'm going to throw out now. You guys are not going on limited duty for a long time. So before you do, you know, make some requirements here while you're still in the saddle and making decisions of things that you think are good for the long run, because the younger generation just might not think of it and they might miss it. But man, you want to protect in every way you can what you've given your life to here, don't you? Well, I think this is the most important area. And on my card number 7, I said the greatest challenge we face is a psychological and emotional adjustment of a transitional relationship within the Navigator family. So, Elvin, I'm high on your job description. Well, those are a few of my scattered thoughts. And I want to come back to card number 8. If I can remember what I did with it here. Blank, blank, blank. 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I wasn't intending to do any card tricks here tonight, but what card number 8 said, you remember, is that the Navigator administration under Jerry Bridges' leadership is being creative, responsible, and doing an excellent job in preparing everybody for the transition. Okay? I think that's the end.